Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, David, how are you, man?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
No, I'm excited that you came on, man. I've known about you for many, many years, but I don't think our paths have ever crossed. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, same here. Like it's weird that we've never actually met, huh?
Yeah, it is. You know what? How did you get started over here? How did you end up over in the United States? Obviously, people listening will understand you've got an English accent, but yeah, how did you end up over here?
I first came over here in 2002 to work at something called Camp America, which a lot of people do different skills, like anything from pottery to lacrosse. And obviously I did soccer a camp in New York. Really kind of liked it after a few months. Anyway, I liked it. At first it was a bit weird, so I decided, like, this is, you know, I'd like to come out here again and figure out a longer stay. So I the following year, it was 2003, I came out with Major League Soccer camps, which, yeah, I'm not sure if you remember those guys.
I do, yeah.
And that was 2003. So I was based in Florida, and the two teams in Florida were defunct. So that was interesting, doing MLS camps when the nearest team was either DC or Dallas, I think, then. But that was fun. It got me into the door, basically. And it was during that stay that people started to ask me to do one-on-one sessions with their kids. And at the time, I was like, well, just get a ball on a wall. You know, you don't need it, like, kind of old school thinking. And then, you know, I finally did a few, and I was shocked at how quickly it transferred with the kids who were, like, dedicated. And from there, like, I made a decision to, because I was coaching teams as well. I was coaching club teams in Tampa, and I'd also done this in the Florida Keys and Alachua, like all over Florida, Panhandle, Jacksonville. And then I decided to settle in Tampa and started to coach club and just kept doing one-on-one sessions on the side. And I really did see results with players. And then I met a girl who wanted to move to California. And I don't know, like, deep down, I always thought I'd end up in California. I'd never been in. I don't know why. I had that gut feeling. So I decided to go with her. And my goal was to focus on doing development, like small group one-on-one stuff.
Right.
But obviously it's tough, right? Like, I don't come from a soccer background. Like, my dad didn't know anyone at the FA or US soccer, right? Like, a lot of new, it's funny because when you look at, you know, coaches who make it over here, when you take a bit of a deep dive, they've always got, like, mad contacts. And you're like, oh, that's why you were able to climb that ladder so quick, you know? Which is always interesting because everybody claims to be self-made, but whatever. So, you know, I had to get a team in order to be able to meet players, right? So I got a high school job, and at that high school, it was a school called Harvard Westlake. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. It's like a really say bougie, but I don't mean that in a bad way. It's like a really good private school, and
Affluent. There's a lot of affluent families.
yeah, like in a good way as well. Like that school churns out good kids. And they had an opening for their JV team. And you know, it was close to where I'd moved to. It was like 2 miles away. So I jumped on that, and it just happened that Ali Riley, who's like my first pro player, she was at the school. She was on the varsity team. We clashed a little bit first few sessions because I was taking the varsity team as well for the first few sessions. And I would, you know, during that season, I would see her watching my sessions, and I was like, this is okay, just ignore it. And then one day she came up to me and asked me if I'd train her and get her ready for the U20 World Cup, because she had an opportunity to play for New Zealand. Because Ali's father, John, is a full-on Kiwi. He's a lecturer on global economics at UCLA, so like a highly, highly intelligent guy. And they asked me to work with Ali. And you know, obviously I took that role on. And she was the first like real game changer for me, because Ali was very good, but she was very good in the American sense, like especially at the high school level. Like she was really fast and she could kick a ball hard. And you know, she had a obviously she had a little bit more than that, but that was what I really noticed about her, and that was how she was utilized. I have a dog, Don, and she's crazy, so she might go somewhere and let me.
That's all right. That's all right.
So yeah, with Ali, like she is very, very disciplined, and like you know, we sat down and we went through weaknesses, which you know, it was technical, right? Like, can you get out of danger without your speed? Right? Can you
Right.
beat someone in a 1v1 without your speed? And obviously, if you've got natural speed, that's always your first go-to, right? Like, you're not trying to
Sure.
slow people down. But when you come up again, and she was going to Stanford, so you know, that's what we were saying. Like, you're going to be going up against defenders who are just as fast as you, right? Can you combat that? And Paul ended up converting her into a fullback at Stanford, which was really good, because then she understood the attacking role. And it went from there, really, Don. That was like the first trigger moment, I guess. And you know, the story goes in, I think it might have been like 09. Ali was like, Dave, you need to grow up. Like, you train all these players, because at that time I think I was training, like, it would have been a bit later. I was training like Abby Wambach and Amy Lepelibit and all these like really good players who've like won Olympic gold medals. And Ali was like, Dave, no one knows who you are. You're just like Dave the soccer guy. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? So I started a company and, you know, basically tried to legitimize individual training. Because you know, when I remember when I first started the company, this would be 2011 when we first started Beast Mode Soccer. Even then, even with all the success I'd had then, people were like, you can't make a business out of it. You've got to coach and do this on the side. And my way of thinking is like, you can't do both, right? Properly, you can't do both, because you don't have an infinite amount of hours. And realistically, how much of your life do you want to spend on the field if you're going to have a life?
Right,
Right?
right.
Some would say, I still don't have a life, which sometimes I'd agree with. But I wanted that challenge, Don. I wanted that challenge of legitimizing what I do and proving people wrong that you can make a business out of it if you're good enough at it. Because at the time, I was like, golfers have got golf pros, tennis players have got tennis pros, and everyone's argument like, yeah, but they're individual sports. I'm like, okay, American football, yeah, but that's positional. And it's like every argument I had, people had another one, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do it anyway, so it doesn't matter. And so I did. I went for it. I wrote down everything that we had done with Ali, and we had the bare bones of a curriculum, which is a roving curriculum, I call it, right? Because it's always changing.
Sure.
We're always trying to get better. But we do have that skeleton model of individual development hand in hand with team development, because individual development's a small cog in the wheel, but it's an important cog, because I've never met a pro player who does the bare minimum, who got there by doing the bare minimum. That was a long answer.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, it's funny. I was about the same time you were doing that, I was doing up in the Bay Area, I was doing goalkeeper training. And I had very, very similar story. I had Lindsay Dickerson, who ended up playing for Stanford and played for the youth national team. And she was like my first one. And then that led to Allie Kirshner, who ended up at Duke, and kind of very similar in the same way. But that was goalkeeping, right? Nobody still that I knew was doing, you're right, was doing field player individual training. And I think it was a lot of what you talked about at the beginning. And that's look, first learn to juggle and you don't need anybody for that, right? And then use a wall and you don't need anybody for that. But I think what you've shown, and now it's quite common for players to have individual trainings, is there are scenarios, there's situations, there are places players can definitely use guidance in in the individual training realm for field players. Not just I, it was very obvious for me as a goalkeeper coach, right? Why what they were doing as a team wasn't working for the goalkeeper at all, and they weren't getting any help at all. Maybe the head coach took a class or something, but it was still just drills. It wasn't coaching, right? And I think the youth, the field player training realm used to be that way, where it was, if they were working with an individual, it was just drills. But it wasn't coaching.
And that's the thing. Like now, like I do sometimes feel like I spawned the devil, right? Because now it's everywhere,
Right.
and I'd still argue that 99% of people aren't doing it right. They aren't, and you go on Instagram and TikTok, and more trainers care about viral moments than they do actually developing their players. More trainers care about polishing already good players and claiming them than they do taking a kid, from AYSO. Maybe they top out at an NIA school. That's still a huge
Right.
success, right? For me, like I always say, like some of my biggest success stories, no one knows who they are. I've had players who lacked the mechanics of, an athlete when they were 10. And they ended up playing at an NAA or a, D2, D3 school, and they killed it, right? That is just as big a success as having a player,
Love that.
win a World Cup, but that won't go viral,
Right.
right? Because, that's just the way the world is with flashing lights and everything. And I always say, unfortunately, integrity is very hard to be scalable. And what I've seen in my space, it's not good, honestly. Like you just see so many drills and exercises that are just not very good, but they look great on camera. I try to educate, because I get so many emails saying, "Oh, can you recommend a coach here or a coach there?" And I can, and I do my research on it, but the questions people need to ask are, what is the history of this trainer? Right? Okay, say they, oh, but they trained this kid from this pro team. Okay, how long have they trained them? One season, that's not much, is it? Right? And even if it's one season, how did that season go? Were they better? Right? How many kids have they taken from your level and Now they're at a better level. And if you ask those kids, what helped you? What would their answer be? Right? And, you need to go and watch a session, kind of psyop wise, right? Don't tell anyone you're showing up. You go and watch a session because I've seen so many trainers who online, they have this persona of, and everything looks world class. And then I've seen them. And it's almost like so disappointing because they're like this. Yeah, all right, do that. And you're like, oh mate, come on. You're charging this parent $150 and you're on your phone as soon as they leave. And I've seen trainers show up, film a drill and leave. And then I'll see that on social a couple of days later, going, oh, we did this session for an hour and a half. And I'm like, oh my days, like I was there. You literally filmed it for 20 minutes. And there's so much false coaching going on that it's shocking. There's some really good people out there. There's some really, really good trainers. But stop believing the viral moments. Like I was on a podcast the other week and I was like, I swear, like the exercises that I put out, they must be quite boring to the eye because they're so specific for each player. Right, I'm putting one on tomorrow from Simone Jackson. And it's Simone's at Orlando. I've had Simone since she was in high school. And Simone's IDP from my end is still working on, that initial beating a player into space. And Simone's real powerful. And I want her to use what she's been given explosive-wise, that separation touch into a shot. That's not viral. Right, that's not putting up all the equipment and having 10 grand worth of equipment and nets in the goal and goalkeepers making over the top saves. Right, it doesn't go viral, but I just like to open a window into what a trainer who is actually training people and developing what that actually looks like. Because that's what I do. Now, I've been caught in the trap before of, oh, I've got to make viral content. I've got to make viral content. And it's just cringe because it's not real, right? It isn't real that way. I always like to put the ugly moments in as well. And, could I edit a session and make it go viral? Yeah, I could put every shot goes into the top corner. If we're using a keeper that day, they won't be happy with me. But could we add equipment to make it look cool? Yeah, but that's not what we do every day. Like what I show on my social, I want anybody to be able to take and use it. Whether that's a kid with very, very little resources with a ball and a wall for a goal, I want them to be able to do our exercises that they see it and they see. A Simone or a Kennedy Fuller or past it was Alex or Rach Daly. I want them to be able to see that. But like, oh, that's simple, but it must work because it works for them. I'm honestly what I'm most proud of with our stuff is you see it on the field, right? You see those movements on the field, and then that takes us down the road of the Twitter warriors. Who want to argue about unopposed and opposed training, who they'll just shout into a black void, honestly, about unopposed not working. And I always provide evidence and then I get one guy who's accusing me of, well, no, you filmed that one after, so it makes it look like you did it before. And I'm like, oh my days, how much time do you think I've got on my hands, sir? Like, come on. You can ask
I
the
do. I
players.
do love the argument of unopposed to opposed training, and to me, it's never made sense. If we Americanize it and we think about it as to other sports, you've got individual players out on a basketball court just shooting free throws or shooting three pointers or doing jump shots or driving to the hoop unopposed all day long, and we want both sides of it. We say, well, that's what makes Americans better basketball players than soccer players because they just go out on the court on their own. And then when we translate it to soccer, we go, well, unopposed training doesn't work. I said, wait a minute, you can't have it both ways. You can't have it. It works for basketball, but it doesn't work for soccer. They're both fluid team sports, where
Well,
the player
certain parts of
control,
it,
you can't have it both ways.
yeah. But there's certain parts I'd agree with, like when you see, these are videos, the kids are doing like rainbow flicks and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that's not going to translate, is it? But the whole point of what I do is the translation, right? Is for me, I failed as a trader until I see it on the field in a game. And I say this all the time as well. The biggest point that people miss when they're screaming into the void about unopposed training is the psychological aspect of extra training, right? And this goes for 13-year-olds and up, right? And Rach, Daly, and Alex are always the ones that I point to. Like, before camps, I used to work with Alex. Did that week or 2 weeks of that technical work, did that make a difference in her? Probably not. But the psychological aspect of knowing I'm going into this camp with the US national team, I've done more than everyone else, I'm ready. Now, she's not thinking this, but subconsciously she knows it,
Sure.
right? I'm ready, right? And again, everything we did with Al was so specific to her. It was back then, it was hours and hours of download footage and editing it so that she always knew that I was working on exact things that she needed to work on. Whether it is patterns of a missing, a certain shot, or a movement around the box wasn't good enough. And as long as I could show it in video, it's so powerful. Now, that's the great thing about 2026. Is that we can pretty much do that for any kid, right? With VO and Trace and any parent who's on VO, you need to convince every parent on your team collectively to pay $40 each. No, $40 for the whole team per month. And I'm not sponsored by VO, right? They do a thing called VO Spotlight. And because it's the most frustrating thing when parents will send me the footage. They're like, yeah, here's a full game. I'm like, I don't want to watch a full game. I need to see your players' clips, and VO will do it. Or either the coach or the club don't want to do it because it's an extra $500 a year for a team. It's the best $500 a year parents can spend. And that's per team. It's not per player, right? It's per team. And it's better than a new pair of boots, right? Because then, like, I can go in and it's even so good for the kid because then they can watch their clips back and we can really hone in exactly on what they need to work on. Like I was chatting to a coach the other day and their argument was, oh, well, not every kid's got that. And it's true. And I'm like, 2026, if it's a high level player, they've got it. Yeah, but what if they haven't? And again, I was kind of like, this is, I mean, you could argue this all day. I said, well, do they have a parent? Yeah. Or a guardian, yeah. If they got a cell phone, yeah, so they can film the game then. Yeah, but what if they don't? And it's like, bro, come on, this is insane. But every parent's got that ability, whether they've got an Android or an iPhone or whatever, to film it and then edit it afterward and get the clips for the player. Right? How I would recommend, and this does two things, Don. Keeps the parent busy in the game so that they're not screaming at the ref.
Useful.
Right. So all they got to do is follow their kid around with it. And I recommend like a little notepad so they can, every time their kid plays, they can make a note of the time. So making it so easy to clip their own game. And then their player can watch that back. And video is so powerful because video doesn't lie. So a player can walk off that field thinking they were awful when really they did one awful thing in the game. And they've ignored all the positive things they did in the game. So it balances itself out. And, they might think they had the best game of their life and they actually didn't make any impact whatsoever. So video is super powerful. Talk your parents into paying that extra little bit of money. What is that? There's 20 people on a kid, that's an extra $2 a month. Come on.
Right. Not much of an excuse, really.
No, especially at like ETNL and GA level, MLS Next and all those levels, they need to have it. If you're
I
serious about
personally,
your
most of them
development.
do. I mean, not that many teams don't anymore.
No.
It's become cost, like you said, it's not cost prohibitive like maybe it was at one time.
Yeah, even like 2, 3 years ago, right? Like you'd have to send your footage to Wyscout to do it, and that would be quite expensive.
Right.
But now with AI, it's not expensive, and it's hugely, hugely powerful. Hugely powerful.
Yeah, I'd agree. So a lot of our audience is youth parents, youth players trying to figure out, how to make it to the next level, how to play in college. Yeah. What's the first bit of advice based on what you've observed in the youth landscape? What's the number one thing that you see kids not doing that they have control over? 100% of the kids have
Focusing on the
control.
right part of development. Honestly, like every kid says that they want to be world class, but they'll go out and just hit a ball around with no actual plan. Where,
Right.
we've on my website, we have a free IDP. It's a hefty bit of work to do, I'll be honest. But once you've done it, you've got a full plan. Right. And that is what players have to do because, there's so much generic work out there. And let's be honest, on Instagram, and no one does those drills. Right. No one. They save them and they never look at them again. Right. So, what players aren't doing correctly is, again, if they can get footage, analyze their own game, then write down their strengths and weaknesses. Then go to their coach and see whether they agree, get their feedback. Then go to the players on their team, see if they agree, get their feedback, because kids are mean. They'll tell you straight up. Right? Then you write exercises for what you need to work on. That is usually ball mastery and first touch, because ball mastery and first touch both bleed into being a 1v1 maverick. Which is what the US is drastically missing, which is like on the women's side, like why everybody loves Trinity Rodman, and players like Mallory Swanson and Solf Smith, these players who love running at people and taking them on, right? This is why these players are loved so much because they're Mavericks, but we don't create enough of them because I feel like in our landscape, it's pass move. You can't pass move unless you've got a really good technical base anyway, right? Everyone refers to that
Right.
05 Barcelona team. Every single player on that 05 Barcelona team was world class, right? They could do everything with the ball, but not just pass, right? So ball mastery, first touch, which is basically a ball and a wall. Right. And it's not just hitting a ball at a wall. It's, receiving on the half turn with the ball. It's getting obsessed with the wall. Can I hit this certain part of the wall with this part of the foot? Can I control it dead? Can I control it dead by hitting it as hard as I can 10 yards away from the wall?
Right,
You know,
exactly.
and it's
Yeah.
that obsession of improvement. And then, is this translating into my games? And if they're doing it correctly, it will translate into games. And then it's repeating the whole process 3 months later. And then you're constantly, constantly growing. And I guarantee you, out of however many people are listening to this, people will be nodding their head because it's true and it's very basic, right? What I've just said, but maybe 5% will do it. Maybe. And if they do it, they're going to be. They'll go through the roof, like technically wise. And I don't care what level you're at right now. You will, if you do that process, you will develop. But in 2014, we put out a program called The Challenge. And it was five videos. Each video had 5,000 touches on it. And the challenge was to do it for 100 days. So obviously, that's half a million touches. The feedback that we got was, it's a lot of work, right? My legs are tired, which, yeah, it's going to be a lot of work. But after 3 or 4 weeks, it's like, I'm so confident on the ball. Then after the actual 100 days, they were different players, right? And it's not rocket science, but it's getting outside and actually doing the work. And it's getting even worse now because we've got AI now. Humans are getting even lazier, right? People will go on AI and be like, oh, I need someone write me a one-on-one session. This is what I want to work on. And they just spit out garbage, or not garbage, but generic, because anything's better than nothing. But it'll be generic no matter what you feed in, it's going to be generic. And then they don't do it anyway, right? So,
Right.
the biggest thing that I would say to players is invest time in yourself and stop looking for shortcuts. And any trainer or program that you can buy that is promising you shortcuts is a fallacy. Run away. It's going to take work from your end.
No, I love that. That's so sharp, and it's I think it's so spot on. And you're right. I mean, I tell players nowadays, you this generation is so lucky, because if you want to know how to do anything, you can find it on YouTube, and you can copy that, right? I mean, if you want a complete wall workout, YouTube it. It's there, right? If you want to know how to juggle or what it looks like, it's there. And yet, when you go out to games, we're not seeing it translate to the masses across. The number one thing that we complain about as we scout for colleges is that first touch is bad. The ability just to play a ball on the floor smoothly, they'd be able to lace a ball over 15, 20 yards. It's just not there. And it's something that is controllable on an individual level to virtually 100%. I mean, that there's the pressure that you and I were talking about, earlier, when we talk people talk about training under pressure as opposed to unopposed, is the one thing that needs to be worked in as you go along for a player to learn the timing and distance of defenders and that type of thing. But it does begin with what the
Yeah,
individual
exactly.
can
And
do on their own. That's where it
that's
starts.
why I said, for me, I haven't been successful until we see that transition into games, right? But the process is learn the movements, learn the timing, put it together. And I think that's where the purists come in, go, oh, they should learn that on the street. Ain't no one playing in the street, mate. There's no one playing street soccer anymore. Sorry. Kids very rarely play pickup anymore because the media's done a really good job in getting parents to think that if you let the kid out of your sight, they're going to be kidnapped. Something bad's going to happen. It's a different generation, and it's fine. You either move with it, or you just sound like a grumpy old person complaining that kids don't play pickup anymore. So you just got to move with the times and understand that. Yeah, it's not perfect, but this system works. I think that's the most annoying part of what I do is when coaches will say to players, oh, I don't know why you're doing that, it don't work. And you're like, bro, you've seen this kid's development the last 6 months. Do you not think something's happening here? Right? Because everybody wants to take credit for players. And the only person that should take credit is the player.
I
No one
couldn't
else.
agree more, David. When I was coaching players, I would tell coaches, I've never created a good player in my life. Never. I've showed them things to do, but it's still on the player to go out and get it done. I can't make you better. You have to decide you're going to make you better. One, I love that. I love that so much.
Do we guide players? Yeah, and it's like you're bang on. Like, do we guide players? Yeah, is in the off season, is Sarah Gordon from Angel City driving 50 miles to be at my field at 7 a.m.? Yes. Is Kennedy Fuller doing the same drive? Yeah, that's the difference right there. They want to improve, right? And unfortunately for them, I train early mornings and they're there anyway. Do they complain for a few minutes? Yeah, they do. But they get it done. And there's nothing, honestly, there's nothing more cringe. And this is clubs as well. There's nothing more cringe than a club when they say, "Oh, we made this player, we got her onto the national team." And you're like, "All right, well, what about the 3,000 other kids in your club? What did you do for them? Why isn't it the same model? Why are they not at the same, like, not obviously they're not all going to be national team, but why aren't they all, local superstars then?" It's because the kids do it more, right? Whether that's with trainers or whether it's on their own. And now we've got like kids who work with like eight or nine trainers. It's going crazy. And then you've got different people telling you different things, because the hype machine, right? It's like a different hypey trainer every month. And I always get told, like, "Oh, who's your biggest competition?" And I'm like, "I've not got any." They're like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Well, I wrote the book on individual training in 2013. Like, the Better Soccer Blueprint. I wrote the deepest IDP you can still get your hands on. There's nothing deeper than the soccer vortex in 2015. Like, literally, there's nothing better than that. So you tell me who I'm, because they've got more followers. That's the target, right? Is it? Or is it the history? Like, 2015 World Cup, I had 18 of those players who I was working with. 2019, I had 13 of those players who won a World Cup. Like, I've had a player at every Women's World Cup since 2007. I've had, players in every final since 2011. You tell me who I'm competing with. My history's right there, right? Just because I'm not like not putting out 50 pieces of content every day doesn't mean it's not there. And that's when you kind of wish, I did get caught up in it for a while, but then you kind of wish parents are a little bit more mature and do their research instead of believing the new flashy thing, right? Because they it, all I see a few trainers online who are brilliant, really good, really detailed. The rest of them, clowns. They're there to entertain. They're there to get viral videos. Let me see long-term development. Let me speak to your players, because I do speak to players, and it's usually not good.
I think that's fair, and I think this is so timely because we're getting to the generation now where you've got the first sets of parents who grew up with social media happening now. So, their kids are only 5 or 6, but still, I get contacted by 7, 8 year old parents of 7 and 8 year olds asking me about college. What's it going to take? And it's like, my Lord, will you please let your kid be a kid for a little
Yeah,
while
can
and
you
enjoy the game?
just
And
put
even
the
at
phone down
seventh
and
or
go and
eighth
hug the
grade,
kid?
let your kids be children. They're going to end up hating the game because you're treating it like a job when your kid is 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 year old. You're treating it like a job. And I think social media is part of that, unfortunately.
It is, especially like on the women's side, because we've had a few stories, right? Like, on the women's side, like Olivia Moultrie was the first one, right? Liv was the trailblazer, because she had to sue the league for them to even let her play. Then it was, "I want my kid to be the next Olivia Moultrie." And I used to just look at parents and be like, "Well, that ain't happening." Because I worked with Liv from like, I think she was 11 until she was 13, 14, until she went pro. Liv's just wired different. Liv's up at, 5 a.m. training on her own in the backyard. She's different. Then it's Alyssa and Giselle. Right now, I worked with Alyssa and Giselle. I think they were 9 and 10. And I knew they were different. Right? There's a photo of me with those two with their Alex Morgan soccer camp t-shirts on.
Right.
And I knew they were different. And I moved from the valley to down here. So I didn't work with them after that. But I've always kept an eye on them. And they're different. And it's okay. Your kid is special in a different way. These kids, I mean, I don't know what the Thompsons feed them because they've got the youngest coming through as well, Zoe. Apparently, Zoe's going to be a baller as well. But your Alyssa's, your Giselle's, your Olivia Moultrie's, your Kennedy and Camden Fuller. That's another family, right? Kennedy is right now away with the U20s. Cam's away. I think she's with the 19s or the 18s. Cam was like. No, she got some award for like freshman at TCU, but she was 17 when she went there. Like some players are just different. Stop again, stop chasing viral moments. Stop chasing the next big thing. Focus on your kid's journey. That's it. Your kid's journey, they might top out at a mid D1 school or a D2, D3, NAIA, they might top out at Stanford. They might not go pro. They might top out at USL Super League Pro. They might top out at NWSL and never be able to play in Europe or the Champions League or the national team. But whatever they top out at, that was their best level they could ever reach. Like nothing else, doesn't matter what you think, could have made them jump a little bit further. You can add a certain amount of percentage, but comparison is what, the thief of all joy, right?
Right.
And unfortunately, you hit the nail on the head. Unfortunately, social media makes it really easy for parents to compare. And it's like, well,
Right.
my kid's banging goals in this AYSO league. They're banging 110 goals and she's nine. Yeah, because that's rec soccer and no one cares about it. Right, you've got still got kids chasing butterflies on the other team. Just focus on their journey and support them when they need it, because that comparison is just not fair. Imagine comparing your kid to a living. I want my kid to be like Olivia Moultrie. Cool. I want to wake up with Messi skill. That's about it. That's the chance that you've got. Because I shudder to think the amount of hours extra that Liv put in, and she still does. Liv just eats, sleeps, breathes. Liv, you knew. If you'd spoken to 12-year-old Liv, she'd be like, oh, I'm going pro. I'm going to play for the national team. And you believed it. Most kids at that age, you're like, yeah, go on. It's like, oh, I want to play at UCLA. But Liv is straight like, no, I'm going pro. And there was no hesitation in her voice. And you're like, okay. When you speak to her parents and they're like, yeah, all we try to do is get her to rest the proper amount and she does everything extra. So, again, parent-wise, stop comparing, but set your kid up to maximize their own potential, which is that what I set out earlier, right? If you set them up, because you're not just teaching them, football habits there, you're actually teaching them life skills. Which I think is just as well, it's more important than football, right? Is the ability to deal with things for the rest of your life, the ability to deal with coaches who don't like you, because you sometimes at work you're gonna have bosses who just don't like you. But if you've dealt with that at the age of 12, you're like, oh, I know how to deal with this, right? It doesn't faze you, working on your weaknesses, polishing your strengths. It really does set your child up for future success. And, another one that I always tell parents is don't stop trying to get married to the level at college. Right? I want my kid to play at Stanford. I want my kid to play at UCLA. Well, what if your kid hates it? What if your kid gets to Westwood and can't stand it? You know, like, why not find a program that your kid's going to love first, and then there's football as well?
Oh man, now you're talking my love
You know?
language, because that's been what I've been preaching since day one. Like, I coached in the NCAA, yes, I've coached at Division II, I've coached Division III, I've coached NAI, I've coached JC. And when we won junior college, league championships, the joy that those kids had were just as much as the joy that the kids that were winning the NCAA championships. Or I've got a picture of Lindsay on the wall with a national championship trophy from Stanford. The joy was the same. There was no drop off or no increase for her as opposed to the junior college kids and everything in between, and the relationships and the experience that they had. I just want families to find that what fits their kid. What fits your kid? Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. What fits your kid? Because you want your kid to be happy. We don't want another, horror story of a kid, taking their life because the pressure was too much and it wasn't what they wanted and it wasn't where they should have been. Even if they were winning a national championship, it's not where they should have been. So what are we doing at the end of the day if we're not doing what's right for our individual child? And that's what I can't stand about the online advice. Most of all, is because it's generalized and it's geared towards 1%. It's not
And
geared
that's the
towards the
thing.
other
It's even less
99%.
than that, I think. Like, it's less than 1%, right? Like, a lot of the advice that I see is geared to the kids. They're already going to that level, and we know it. You can tell, right? You can tell. You know, but there's kids that I work with right now that I know will go to a high level. Not going to tell them because I don't want them to stop working, but I know they're going to get to levels. You know, like I'm working with kids right now who I know will be on the national team. I know it. Again, not going to tell them. But that's their goal. And I'm working with kids now who they'll end up mid-level college. And I love working with both of them. You know, like it's okay. It's, yeah, but I don't think parents realize how difficult it is to actually like play at a Stanford or a UCLA or go pro. And obviously, people like me probably don't help, to be honest, because a lot of my players do end up going there. Right. But, well, you know, I'm in Southern California. People want to fly out here to train. So we get those top level players coming out all the time. Right. But I don't think they quite realize how difficult it is to even catch the eye
They don't know. Think they
of a
don't understand.
Stanford, you know? But it's
They think being
huge.
on an ECNL team is enough. My kid's playing an ECL. They're playing the top league. That's all that needs to happen. It's going to be automatic, and that's not how it works.
Which again is great. It's an accomplishment. You've reached a really good level. Now your work starts.
Then how it starts,
Right? Like, I remember 2015 in Vancouver, the women won the World Cup. There was obviously a massive party afterward for like family. I think Kelly O'Hara had put me down as her brother. So I got in there. And Alex walked up to me. She's like, "All right, focus on the Olympics now." And I'm like, or go and enjoy yourself. Right? Like, are you ready for the next? Like, now the hard work starts. Right? And that really always hit me. It always hit me. And you know, when Rach got onto the English national team, I'm like, all right, because that was a surprise when she got called up. I'm like, all right, Rach, now we start over. Now the really hard work starts, because now you've got to try and stay. Right? Now you've got to perform week in, week out. Now have you got the mental prowess to do that? Right? Then it's a different sort of hard. So, you know, what I'm not one of these people who doesn't like the ECNL. Right? I actually admire what they've built. Though I think it's stupid that we've got the GA and ECNL and MLS all fighting each other. Yeah. Like, It's absurd. I don't understand why we can't just have, right, this is a top league, this is a second league, this is a third league, and there should be a system where you can work your way in, right? But communism also works on paper.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't work in the real life.
Right.
But you know, so yeah, like I feel like what these people have built, recent energy, yeah, like it's fantastic, right? It is good. Do you have to be playing them? You have to be able to get there. You've got to be able to get looks, and that's the easiest way, right? But once you've made it there, don't let that patch on your arm. Don't let that fool you, right? Do not let that fool you, because that doesn't mean anything. It actually, that's a lie. If you don't want to play college soccer, then it means something. You know, you've made the top youth level. Brilliant. Well done. Well done. You might,
Right.
because
If
not
that's your
every
peak,
SNL kid
right.
wants, they don't want to play college, right? Some of them.
That's
You've
true.
made
It's
it. That's
true.
really good. That's really good.
It's
But if you
true.
want to play college, then you're using that as a vessel. And I was chatting to Christian and them the other day, and you know, they always say, like, we don't create players. We've just provided the system for them. They've still got to make it themselves, which is so true, right? So, you know, that's the other advice for parents. Stop being married to the league that they're in. You
I
know,
love it.
and I the funny thing is, after that podcast with ECNL came out, I got a bunch of like really shitty DMs from like parents, clubs using their club page. Like, this was shit, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, listen, 20 years I've been doing this. Before ECNL was around, before GA
Right.
was around, I do know what I'm talking about because I'm neutral. I don't have a
Right.
dog in the fight, so I can be neutral. And from
Right.
my standpoint on the women's side, ECNL is the top league. Are there teams in the GA that can beat ECNL teams? Of course there are. Yeah, it's regional. But as a whole, it's the ECNL. Yes, it's the top league. There's nothing shameful about being in the GA or being in the EA 64, whatever it's called. There's nothing shameful about that. And again,
Right.
of course, we're using comparison, right? Whereas if you just focus on your path, then you're going to find your place. Right? But yeah, I had a few DMs. I'm like, oh my days, I didn't. Are they paying you? Is this league paying you to be their biggest supporter? Like, what's going on? Do you get a cut of the merch? Like, it was, yeah. And you know, I do know what I'm talking about. I saw the DA, because when the DA came out for the boys, and then it came out for the girls, and apparently the DA for the girls was going to kill my business. That's what I got told by NWSL coaches. That's what I got told by DA clubs. It's going to kill your business because they're doing periodization. There's no time. You can't do anything extra. I got told that, and I'm like, well, it won't, but I'm not worried about it in the slightest. Then I
Right.
saw it fail, right? I saw the DA fold, and then I saw, you know, everyone scrambling to get back into the leagues, and then the GA formed from the scraps of the
Right.
DA and all of this. I saw it all. So don't come at me for having, you know, a pretty good opinion. And again, just an opinion. Nothing I say is the truth. It's just my truth.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, and I can't say I disagree with you at all. I think where I it's not even a gripe with the ECNL that I have. It's with people who think it's a be all end all for every kid, and it's just not.
No,
And
it's
it's it
not.
and it's I, it it does drive me nuts when I, you know, if we. If I travel to Florida and I see two teams from Southern California playing each other, and I think, what are we doing? You know, so I think I've got small issues within the system, but
You
overall,
know,
what's been built, I think, is it's valid. I think I
yeah,
agree with
gone.
you.
I think one of the reasons I've got great respect for ECNL, what it's done, is that I remember when the DA came out for the girls, and I remember what they said. And I remember April Heinrich saying, if you want to play at D1 college, if you want to play for the youth national team, if you want to play pro, you have to be playing DA. You cannot be playing any other leagues because our scouts aren't done. So they went out to crush ECNL.
Right.
They purposely did that. They didn't talk to the ECNL people. They didn't try to collaborate. It was, this is what we're going to do. You either come with us or you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
And I think that's why I've got a lot of respect for them, because they took that fight on and were like, all right, we'll see what happens.
Right.
Right. And a lot of the what you'd call the top clubs did leave, whether that's through fear or they wanted to stay loyal to the then, all those people in US soccer aren't there anymore. But whether they wanted to stay loyal to those people, it's a tough one. I think that's why I've kind of got that mad respect for them, because they took that fight on the
Yeah.
chin. They took it, and people say, oh, they say, like, oh, if you're not playing ECNL, you won't get here, you won't get there. But even if they did say that, where do you think they learned that? They learned that from the head of US soccer back in the day, who just said the same thing about their league.
Right.
But again, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I,
no, I think
like
that's
you, mate,
fair.
like you, I've been in it too long.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember Super Y League. That's how far I go back to when they first started to probably even
Yeah.
before your time in America. I think it had to have been. Yeah, it back in the late 80s, early 90s, they tried this league, and ECNL may continue on forever, or in 10 years' time there may be something new.
Yeah.
I don't know that it matters. I think that, and I'd love to hear your thought on it, but for the There are areas of this massive country of ours where it's just not really feasible for a parent to have their kid in MLS Next or ECNL, if we consider those the two tops on each
Yeah.
end. It's just not feasible. I mean, the parents would have to travel two, three
Yeah.
hours, and it's like, well, what kind of commitment do you have if you're not willing to spend 4 hours, round trip in a car for your kid? That's stupid. It's just not realistic for some families. Financially, it's not realistic for some families. And let's face it,
I mean, would you
it's
do
a
it?
$15,000 to
I wouldn't.
$20,000 a year per player commitment at the end
Yeah.
of the year, all things wrapped up for their kid to play in the ECNL. It just is what it is, or more.
And I
So
think
for
if you're at a club and you're getting $80,000 worth of value from it, then it's okay.
Right.
Right? But unfortunately, there's not many clubs who are providing that much value as well.
Yeah, and that's look, and for families that look, there's a lot of families with a lot of money, and they want to spend it however they want to spend it. I don't. It's not none of my business. I don't care if you spend $100,000 a year on your kid's soccer experience. If that's what you want and you can afford it, it's great. I was talking about on the other end of it, David. So the
Yeah.
thought that I had was. What you to wrap this up back to the beginning, for I have seen, and I can point to dozens of individuals who have ended up playing at a very high level of college soccer, who did not play in ECNL, did not play in MLS Next. For Pete's sake, I had a conversation with Jamie Clark on Inside College Soccer not too long ago. Go look at their roster at the men's national championship team, and it's very few MLS Next kids,
Yeah.
very few international kids, a lot of ECNL kids, so a lot of second division, right? And kids that aren't even ECNL on
Yeah.
that roster playing games. At the end of the day, moms and dads, it still comes down to how dedicated is your kid to getting better?
All right,
And what is your kid doing to get
that is
better?
it.
At the end of the day, I don't care what the level is, and it is possible for your kid to play at D1 and even high D1 and even
100%.
go on to play pro if they're not part of MLS Next or ECNL. It's possible.
I always, this one always gets shot down as well when I do videos on this. But if you're dedicated enough, and say your family don't have that sort of money, You will get seen. Someone will see you
I agree.
right now, whether that's, a local club team, or whether that's a GA team or ECR, I don't know. Right? Someone's going to see you and you will play college. Like, whether that's through the high school route, which is obviously, it's a little bit more difficult, but there are coaches there who will look always. Right? Because the fact is, mate, like, how many diamonds are there that we haven't even uncovered?
So too big
Like,
of a
I used,
country.
mate, I
There's
used to play in
thousands.
Hispanic leagues when I
Oh,
first got to
yes.
LA. And these guys, like, we would
Right.
show up in our like nice kit and everything. These guys would take us to pieces
That's
because we're playing on like
unbelievable.
absolute trash turf. Like, one side of the field's this long and the other side of the field dirt. Their touch was immense, and I used to think then, like, how are these guys not in college then? Why aren't these guys playing pro? They were class. But now
Who's
that I
this
feel like
15-year-old
the
playing
net's
with
so
adults, by
big.
the way, and schooling them?
Yeah.
Who's this kid? Yeah.
But now I feel like the net is big enough with a scouting network that
Getting better.
most clubs, whether it's ECNL or MLS Next or whatever, most clubs won't turn you away if you can't afford it. They
Now
won't. They
that,
because
that's what's really nice too. That is true. That's happening more and more. And boy, I tell you what, man, you cannot keep a secret of an extraordinary athlete. You can't
No.
in any sport. You can't keep that kid's secret. The word gets out. Believe me,
Yeah.
it gets out. And all it takes is one college coach, and I don't care if you're up in Maine, somebody in Vermont's going to hear about you, and then the word gets out that he's recruiting that kid, and then somebody else is curious, and then somebody
Yeah.
else knows. Pretty soon, five coaches know, and then the race is on, and the word is out. It happens with great players. It doesn't happen with the average bang on, oh, my kid's
No.
really great in his high school, and our high school league sucks. Not talking about that kid. I'm talking about a truly great player that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
Can't keep
And
that
it even
secret.
goes to the stage, like, if they get to a JC, right, everyone talks. Everyone's going, have you seen this kid?
Oh, well,
Right.
once
And
you're in
then
the
all of a
system,
sudden,
brother,
yeah,
once you're in the
all of a
system.
sudden, phone calls are getting done, like, you need to watch this
Oh,
kid.
yeah. Oh,
You know,
100%.
there's so many players out there like that. But and that's it. But it
100%.
comes back to what I said near the beginning of taking that time, investing that time in yourself, stay off of TikTok for a day and do this instead.
I
Right.
love it.
Analyze, hyper-analyze, write your goals out, ask your coaches, ask your players, write the drills down, or YouTube, Instagram, whatever. But always tweak them to exactly what you need to work on, right? And then execute, and then repeat. I'm gonna take a walk because UPS are here and the dogs are gonna go crazy.
All right, brother. Well, I think you've kind of wrapped it around. So how do people get a hold of you, brother?
So on socials, everything is Beast Mode Soccer, one word. And yeah, the website is beastmodesoccer.com. And as I said, like, if you go to beastmodesoccer.com/IDP, the IDP is free. It is free. Like, you do get sent any full transparency. You get sent an email sequence that I try to get you to sign up for my app. It's $20 a month. But you don't have to. You still get the free IDP. And it is
I
a
love
heavy
it.
document. It's a heavy document, but if you do the work, you will 100% see the results.
I love it. BeastmodeSoccer.com. Parents, go get that IDP done. Might as well. It's gonna give your child a blueprint to
Yeah, that's
begin
exactly what
building.
it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for spending some time with me, brother. I
Oh,
really appreciate it.
it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Oh, these dogs.
All right. Okay.
Brilliant.
We'll talk soon.
Well, I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Take it easy.